It's Monday, January 16th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Lubbock, Texas. Good evening, and welcome to a podcast that I'm entitling The Case for Digital Storytelling. Today, on the Martin Luther King holiday, I had an opportunity to travel to Miami, Texas, which is about 3 hours north-northeast of Lubbock, and work with the 25 K-12 teachers that teach at the Miami School District 1A school, which they have about 25 teachers in grades K through 12, and the topic of our entire workshop was digital storytelling. We spent the beginning of the morning actually looking at a series of videos that were created by participants in the institute hosted by the Center for Digital Storytelling that is located in Berkeley, California. And we also took a look at an excellent student-created video called Grass Born to be Stepped On that won some awards in the last couple years as a fantastic example of student work in digital storytelling. So I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I would certainly welcome any feedback that you might have on my blog at www.speedofcreativity.org. All right, well, welcome back from your break. I think we're still missing a couple, but we'll go ahead and get started again. And now that we have spent the better part of the morning taking a look at examples of digital stories, and in your groups and together, we've talked about what either contributes or detracts from the quality of those stories, I want to share with you about a 30-minute or so presentation, it might not last that long, making what I call the case for digital storytelling in the classroom, because I think this is a case that needs to be made, and I think that if what we talk about today in our workshop is something that you want to try with students, and as you know, they will jump into this and go with this at a much faster pace than, you know, most digital immigrants as we are to our environment, you can sell that with your administration and with parents and anybody else, citing standards and 21st century literacy skills and all kinds of things. And so I just want to go through a few different points. First off, I want to tell you a story, because last summer, maybe I shouldn't have been blown away by this, but I was. I was teaching a course at Wayland Baptist University on the Lubbock campus, and I had graduate and undergraduate students, 25 students, and one of the things that I did in that class was called a tutorial. I had a professor at Tech that did these with us, and they're actually pretty intimidating because it's the Oxford model, and you read something, and then you go to the professor's office, and you sit down and talk about it, and he or she asks you questions, and you respond, and you reflect, and because of the numbers of students, we did tutorials with two or three students, but that was part of the assessment for the class. Well, the last class night, I had one of my students come up and tell me, actually it was her sister that was in there with her, that this was the first class her sister had ever taken where she read the entire book, and she was an undergraduate student. You can take a lot from that, but one of the things I think that I take away from that is that we need to be doing things in schools and assigning tasks to students that they can't fake, that they can't just read the summary or the cliff notes and get it, that they can't copy off of the web. So my question to you is, what does high-quality teaching and learning look like? What does it sound like? That's my notepad. Last night I took that picture with my cell phone of the notes for this presentation, which I had been working on and thinking about, but really sketching out. Those are the notes to that presentation. That's pretty messy, you know. That didn't happen with a Roman numeral outline and just, you know, everything coming together. What is high quality teaching and learning? Well, what is education? I love this because there's a website you can go to, and it lets you do several of these, where you type your own text, and it looks like Albert Einstein has written this. It says, read Moving at the Speed of Creativity. You know, Wesley's a good guy. Really? Albert did not write that. Dr. Einstein did not write that. But he wrote in 1936, education is what you have left when you have forgotten everything you learned in school. And I think that we really need to look at the kinds of tasks we're giving students and the value of those tasks and the way that we're asking them to either engage or disengage with information. So if we're to think about traditional education, and this presentation, by the way, is linked from your website if you want to go to it. We're on section 2 and you can link to this. Traditional education is a transmission model. Okay, it's a model that says, here's content, I'm going to move it from my brain or from my textbook into your brain, and then have some kind of an exchange where we measure how much has gone in, and we'll call that education. There's a great movie that the George Lucas Educational Foundation published several years ago about Urban Academy in New York. Did I show that to y'all last time I was here? Do we remember seeing one about kids doing debates, and it's an alternative school? I think I showed it to you. One of the administrators there says, education is not filling in someone else's blanks. Yet how many classes have we sat in and taught, I'll raise my hand too, where we're asking students, basically at the end of the day, to fill in someone else's blanks? Here's a way to summarize traditional education. I heard someone recently talk about faculty who are teaching with our video conference system needing the equipment ready so they can show up and throw up. And I would extend that to say traditional education can be a process of the professor showing up and throwing up, the student sucking it up and throwing it back, and then everyone forgetting it. Now, that's extreme. However, if you look at what the research says about traditional lecture-based instruction that I'll reference, it's horrifying. It is shocking to see how little students, even at Harvard University or Stanford University, if they just are lectured to, how much they really retain. Traditional education is passive. It is disconnected from the real world. And I would contend a lot of times it is focused on minimum standards. That's traditional education. Now, what we tried to do this morning was a little bit different. I'm being very traditional right now. I'm lecturing. But this morning, you were broken up into groups. You were working with a partner. You had a task. We were watching some content. And then you were engaged with someone talking about it. And then we were sharing that information. So that is a little different than what we might call traditional education. But what we generally find is that much of education is a disengaging waste of time. And I can think of so many classrooms that I've been in where this is true. Now, I also have examples where that's not true. And as a teacher, I strive to be that person who's making it engaging. But this is a link to a presentation I actually heard last night. It's a podcast by Dr. Carl Wieman. Never heard of him. A Nobel Prize laureate from 2001 in physics. And he gave a lecture recently at the University of British Columbia in Canada. And he was citing research that's most specific to physics, but it talks about three different measures of educational value. The retention of information from lecture, transfer, the conceptual understanding that students of science walk away with, and then students' general beliefs about science. Okay? And he goes in and tells all these stories, and I'm not going to repeat all of it, but let me just give you the summary view. Students that are lectured to tend to remember, guess how much, percentage-wise, of the content. From 10% to 100%, how much? Yeah. It is 10%. That's it. 90% of it is whoosh, out their head. The other conclusion is that in terms of conceptual understandings of science, they have a survey they do about force and motion. Those are things you always learn in a first-year physics class. What do you think the typical retention of physics concepts is across the board?
Zero. It's
better than zero, but it's zero for some because the number wouldn't be this low if it wasn't. What do you think it is? I've done this with over 10,000 students now, all over the place. 25%, 50%, 75%. 25%. It never really gets over 30%. Depending on if you go to Harvard or Stanford, maybe you're closer to 25% than the 20%. So, you know, lecture just doesn't work. And these are research scientists pointing this out. So, what am I asking you to do here today? Well, I am not asking you to change the system, okay? That'd be another presentation for another day, because I could give you that. But today, I'm just talking about your classroom. And my invitation for you today is to think about digital storytelling as something that you can give students as an option for a project that they do in your class. Do you have time, or would you keep your job if you decided all we're doing is digital storytelling? Okay, I'm teaching health, and we can do that through public service announcements, but all we're doing is digital storytelling. I don't know. I'm not trying to say that. But I am going to encourage you to look at this as something which is very compelling, which is standards-based and based in the skills that our students need, and is also very engaging and very rewarding. Because when students engage in these kinds of projects, they have a lot of intrinsic motivation, and we'll talk about some of these benefits. And these tend to be the kinds of things students remember. It doesn't tend to be the stuff that they forget and that 90% of lecture they forget. So here's what I would assert are keys to authentic learning. The first one would be engagement. Next month at our state technology conference, a gentleman by the name of Mark Prinsky is going to be talking, and his big theme is called Engage Me or Enrage Me. Our classrooms now, even here in Miami, Texas, are filled with this strange creature called the digital native. It's the student that grew up with technology, and they have grown up using all of this, and they breathe this, okay? And we're the digital natives. These kids want to be engaged. They don't want to just sit there and be talked to. And they increasingly see what they do at school as irrelevant to their life and to the things that they want to do with their life. And we need to address that. Secondly, I would say learning has to be active. If we go back to what Dr. Carl Wieman talked about, one of the small but hugely impactful things you can do in your classroom to increase student retention has to do with what we did this morning. We asked each other to get into consensus groups and talk and dialogue. I don't know about you, but I have been in morally math classes, statistics classes, where I was never asked to reflect back my understanding of that. You know? So, Wes, what does alpha equals 0.05 really mean in this study? You know, gosh, he never asked. Would have been really good if he had asked, or if he had asked a group that I was in. We need to make learning active. It needs to be in-depth. Think about the first story I started with of the student who had never read a full book before last summer for school. We need kids to be reading full books. We don't need them just skimming the surface of information and never getting in depth. We need learning outcomes that involve higher order thinking. And on our handout for today, or the curriculum page, which I'll jump to real quick. I said handout. I didn't print it for you. But if you want to, you can certainly print it. This is the curriculum that we're going through today. You don't need to necessarily go to this right now. But you're going to see in our next activity where we're going to be talking about the civil rights movement. Today's Martin Luther King holiday. We're going to talk about Bloom's taxonomy. And I think this is really amazing. Here's a biology professor from Louisiana State. And he says, well, in high school, we just do knowledge comprehension level. When we're undergraduates, we do application analysis level. It's only when we get to graduate school that we do synthesis and evaluation. I don't think the people who wrote the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills would agree with that. But the point is, what do we tend to do most of in school? It's about facts. It's about regurgitation. But what we need, and what the state is even testing us towards, is a lot more, and it's going higher on that scale. So we need, and I'm going to challenge you today, as you think about the digital stories, I'm not expecting anyone here to create a masterpiece. We may have the next Steven Spielberg here. Mrs. Whoever. Maybe here. Or Mr. But the point is, when I give an assignment or I say, okay, go with that assignment, if it's at a very factual level, that's not going to probably be nearly as engaging as if it goes to that higher level. And some of the student project we saw about women's rights in China, there's a lot of stuff that goes way beyond the facts that is implied and included in that kind of project. Another key to authentic learning is long-term retention. I'll skip ahead to a question that I'm going to ask at the end, but you know Bobby Knight's at Texas Tech, right? Well, we had our faculty back to school meeting for the College of Education in the United Spirit Arena last week. And our dean, being the energetic person she is, went down on the floor where Bobby Knight and the tech team were practicing, and during a break talked to him and said, "Will you come talk to my faculty?" And he did. I've never heard him speak in person. Now, be careful because I'm going to record this and share this as a podcast, so I'll be careful with what I say here. But let me point out that his challenge to all of us there was to think about the two teachers that were the most demanding teachers we had ever had. Okay? Paint a picture in your mind of those two teachers that challenged you and were more demanding. Now, that may be in a good way or it may be in a bad way. His contention was that those teachers that challenged you the most, were the most demanding, probably were the teachers you also would rank as your best teachers. And I think we want to make an impact. I mean, I'm in education to help make an impact. That's what draws all of us and keeps us here, right? It's certainly not the money. And so long-term retention and the impact that we have on students is an important thing. And I think it's a key to learning. Collaboration is key. Traditional instruction, I'm isolated. I'm by myself. I turn in my assignment and I'm done. But how does the real world work? The real world works often and increasingly in collaborative teams where students are not by themselves and where they're expected to work with others and be able to deal with difficult personalities and all those kinds of things. We have got to teach people to solve problems. Have you seen the statistics on how many pieces of technology you or I are going to have to figure out before we're dead if we live to our statistically average, you know, lifespan? It's incredible. There are all kinds of things that we have to figure out how to use and all kinds of problems that we have to deal with. Problem solving is huge. And I think we also need assessment that is not just one shot, but it's formative, it's summative, and it's ongoing. So, let me offer you 5 tests. I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and one of the reasons it's a treat for me to come out here to be with you is not only that it's fun for me, but it also gives me an opportunity to put into words some ideas and some things that I've been mulling over for a long time. How do you tell if it's authentic learning? Well, let me give you this as a first litmus test. By the way, who can tell me what a litmus test is from our scientists? It's paper, right? You got litmus paper. And what does litmus paper tell you? Right. It gives you the pH. The pH. Woo! So is it an acid or is it a base? It basically tells you, you know, is this what I'm, what am I looking at? Is it what I'm wanting? If I'm looking for an acid, it'll tell me if it's an acid or if it's not. So here's some litmus tests that you can apply to assignments that you're doing with your students to help determine whether or not it's authentic learning. Put together, I think this is a litmus test. Can you copy and paste the assignment from the web? If you're asking your kids to do a research project, like we talked about last week with Wikipedia or whatever, that's, you know, give me a report about Belize and tell me about the economics and tell me about the culture. I mean, I can give that to you in 5 minutes, formatted with my name on it, and it can sound really good. We've got to be asking students to do more than requirements or assignments that require just copying and pasting. Second part of the test would be, do high-quality completed assignments look the same as others of similar quality? How often in schools, and I'm indicted myself too on this, do we ask students to do an assignment where the final product is going to look the same for everybody? I know teaching fourth grade math as I did, Most of the time, that was the case. Now, it's not to say I never want to do an assignment like that, but I don't think that assignment is authentic in the way that I'm talking about today. Think about the movies that we just saw. We saw five movies. Okay? Those were of varying quality. We identified different things, good and bad, about them. But how different were they? They're pretty different. I mean, different themes, different music, different pictures, different voices. Lots of, I mean, totally different approaches towards telling a story. And so I would argue that an authentic learning task of high quality is not going to look just like my neighbor's, because I'm going to have invested myself into it and my own creativity. It's not going to look like yours. Here's the third part. Do you have incontrovertible proof it is the student's own work? Now, do you think this is an issue for all of us? It's sure an issue at the university, and I bet it's an issue here too. Did you write that? I mean, my English teacher, dating myself from the early 1980s, was so paranoid about us cheating that she would not let us take any of our note cards out of the classroom. In fact, one of my classmates got mono during the semester, and she had to stay home for like 6 weeks. And when she came back with all these note cards, my teacher tore up the cards and threw them away and said, "No, you can't do any of this at home." And we were all horrified. I probably still am horrified because I still remember that story. That was an extreme. But, you know, at that point, she was very concerned with, is this your work? We need to be concerned with that. Why? Because if it's not that student's work, they're probably wasting their time. And they're wasting your time, too, if they're not doing something that reflects their own thinking and their own learning. Okay, fourth part of the test has to do with quality and self-directed learning. If you think about traditional instruction, it is very teacher-dependent, right? Who do I look to as a student to tell me what to do next? You. You're the teacher, okay, because I'm in that model. An authentic learning task is going to invite the student to be self-directed and also self-assessing the quality of their own work. And what do I mean by that? Well, has anybody been to film school here? I haven't. Okay. But we all were able to come up with some pretty good characteristics of quality when it came to digital stories. And in the same way, for an authentic learning task, the student doesn't have to ask the Texas Education Agency, you know, if it is quality or not. They'll be able to do that. And an authentic learning task will ask them to self-assess. Last part of the litmus test, do students voluntarily strive to make their work better on their own time? Let me tell you about Mabry Middle School. Mabry Middle School is in Cobb County, Georgia. I think their website is just Mabry Online, but just in case, I'll Google for it. Yep, and it's just mabryonline.org. I had a chance to meet the principal of Mabry Middle School last summer when I was in California, and he told me the story, his name's Tim Tyson, about, what do you think, looking at their homepage? What's been transformational at their school, because it's at the top of their page? Their film festival. Now, this isn't what they do all the time, every day. They do not have laptops for everybody at their school. Tried, but that didn't happen in Cobb County. But what they do have is an invitation for students to be digital storytellers. And Dr. Tyson talks about how incredibly engaged the kids are making sure that their product is the highest quality it possibly could be. And why do you think that is? Why would they care? You said it. They're doing it for a real audience. Other people see it. They have a film festival. They celebrate the digital storytellers in their communities. And those kids are learning a lot of very authentic skills while they're also covering standards and covering state requirements that they have to cover. So, are all of our assignments going to meet this litmus test? I'm sure they're not. But my contention would be that we should all be challenged by this, and that we should all consider how, at some point at least in the semester, we're doing an assignment. We're having students do an assignment that would meet those kinds of requirements. What skills do kids need for the 21st century? Well, what do they need for the state's test? Has anyone here taken an entire... When was the last release test? 2004 was the last release test, is that right? For all levels? Or we got it last year? Because they're going to skip years, right? Does anybody know? 2004 was? Or was it 2005? 2004. One of the things that I want to do, and this may sound like an invitation for punishment, but I really want to sit down and take the exit level tax so that I'll have a good experiential understanding of what we're asking our kids to do. Because I'll tell you, when I took the GRE, the graduate record exam or whatever, to get back into graduate school, when I walked out of that, I had two main responses. Number one, thank goodness they have a writing part instead of that logic thing, if you've had to take that before. Because, you know, I think we need to have good writers, and I have some writing skills, and I was glad that was reflected. But the other thought I had was, this so inadequately reflects what I can do as a person. And I'm so glad my college is not going to just look at that test score. But what do we do in education? We tend to look at that score. So the state actually says we need a lot more than knowledge comprehension level skills. We need to go up Bloom's taxonomy. This is from document that's called the Engage Model of 21st Century Skills, and academic achievement is here in the middle, but it says kids need digital age literacy, they need inventive thinking, they need effective communication skills, they need high productivity skills. My contention is that if you do digital storytelling with your students, it links to almost all of those things. Your students will be acquiring those skills. And you should be able to sell that to any administrator or any parent or anybody who says, why the heck are we doing this? Why aren't we doing a worksheet? I doubt you have many parents coming in saying that, but you might. How can we win this race? What I've set up for you in this little presentation is, here's what traditional instruction is, here's what authentic learning should look like, so how do we get there? My contention is that we have got to encourage student production of authentic knowledge products. What does that mean? Well, one of the things it means is digital stories, getting students to create the kinds of stories that we've seen today. And the exciting thing is the software tools are free. The images, copyright friendly as well, are available for students to use. The microphones, which I bought this one, Walmart, $9. Okay, this is about the only thing that your computer may not have. And they've pulled in a bunch of extra microphones that we can plug in and use to record our voices. I'm not talking about a camcorder that costs $1,000. I'm not talking about anything else, really, other than a $9 mic that you would need in your room, with whatever computer is there, to be able to do digital stories. So, here's my last three questions for you. And I've already given you the first one. This was the Bobby Knight question. This would be a great... Didn't we do this last time, too? Didn't I ask you to think about the best teachers you've had? I think so. Knight put it in a little different framework, thinking about demanding teachers. But if you think about your two most demanding teachers, you know, and why you remember them and how they challenged them, you know, we need to be stretched as people. And good teachers stretch us beyond what we might have ever dreamed would be our own capabilities and our own potentials. That's what a good teacher can do, a good mentor can do. I hope you want to be one of the two most demanding teachers that your kids have ever had. And you can be by the expectations that you have of what they do. Okay? Do you want your students to remember you forever? Well, I guarantee I remember some teachers forever that I'd rather not. You know, there's good reasons and bad reasons to remember them. But I think we are in this profession, and we stay in this profession, to make a difference, to impact children, okay, to impact students, to change lives. And this may be grandiose, but I really think inviting students to do work like this makes a difference. Ask Tim Tyson and the teachers and students at Cobb County at Mabry Middle School about the impact that digital storytelling has. Does that solve all their problems? Does that just take away all the pressure? No. It doesn't. It's not a panacea. There are no panaceas in education. But it is an engaging activity that students love, and they acquire the skills we want them to acquire. and they even come after school voluntarily to make their products even better. Amazing. Okay? Last question is one that maybe you don't hear much in professional development. Maybe you do. But do you want to have fun with your students in school? Do your kids want to have fun? I had a talk with my son this last weekend. I hope that we'll be looking at moving in the next year as I finish my degree over the summer. And we were buying him new shoes, and I was asking him, are these going to be good for recess and everything? He says, Dad, we don't have recess in third grade. It's going to be fine. I said, son, we're going to be going to a different school. I want to have my own children in schools where we're having fun. It doesn't mean it's not rigorous. It doesn't mean it's not challenging. But it does mean that it's engaging and it's valuable. And it challenges me so that I want to keep learning more. So, this may be a little bit of an exaggeration, but I would say that digital storytelling, if it's not the light, it's a light. All right? We need to teach and assign digital storytelling in our classrooms. And you want to know the good news, besides the fact that you need a $9 mic and that's about all you need? The other good news is you don't have to be the expert on all the technology. I think we're going to have to load some more paper in this printer, but I have printed an 11-page handout that I'll give to each one of you that's a step-by-step of what we're going to talk about after lunch, how to use this program called PhotoStory. The good news is you have experts with digital technology in your room. And you can show them some of the examples of things that have been created before. And you can talk about, for your content area, whether that's science, or whether that is social studies, or whether that's literature and English, or whether that's health or PE. Another story I just heard in December from a teacher that was doing this with students was from a health teacher, and this person found students coming back home. They had been told, write out story ideas for a public service announcement you could do about health, about some of the topics we've been studying. And the student came back with three and said, I can't decide which one to do. Can you help me figure it out? The student had done three and she was asked to do one? How often does that happen? So we need to be assigning and teaching students how to do this. Kids know about digital storytelling because they live in the 21st century, and you do too. So I think that is some good news. We've got resources. I've given you a sheet that has the link to our curriculum for today that you can go back to. This is a topic that I blog about fairly often. There are social bookmarks, which if I link to that really quick and show you, what does that mean? We talked, I think, last time about Web 2.0, about social bookmarks. Anytime I find a website that I think is a good one about digital storytelling, rather than just save it as a favorite on my computer, I save it on my social bookmarks. And so you have on this link, when it finally comes up, 49 different sites that all have to do with digital storytelling. You'll probably find the link to Mabry Middle School's digital storytelling contest there on this site. You'll find examples like we've been looking at. The tutorial for PhotoStory is here. David Jakes is an educator in Illinois who has a blog called The Competitive Voice that's all about digital storytelling. Here's the Center for Digital Storytelling that's based in California, in Berkeley. Okay, their slogan, as I've already mentioned, is listen deeply and tell stories. And you can find all those examples here, except the one that we saw about grass made to be stepped on. And that one is, you know, linked elsewhere. So, what's your next move? The proverbial chess picture here. What are we going to do next? I would say our next move is to listen deeply and tell stories. We listened to stories today. We talked about them. And so what we're going to be doing after lunch is we're going to be deciding what kind of story we want to tell today. We're not talking about a two-hour feature. Okay? We're talking about a 2 to 3 minute story. and that's going to be our task. Any questions or comments about this case that I have made for you? No, I'm going to give you some structure to it. Yeah, I'll give you a choice, but we're not going to just open it wide open. Actually, we're going to focus. How many of you don't just have theoretical knowledge about the 60s? How many of you lived during part of the 1960s? That's not a good question. Well, you notice I'm not asking you to give your birthday. We're going to talk about the Civil Rights Movement, and today's Martin Luther King holiday. And so what we're actually going to be doing here in the next 10 minutes before we break for lunch is we're going to talk about those questions that we're going to pursue further.
Well, I'd like to wrap up with just a couple observations, and first off, give several words of thanks to some people who have shared some resources relating to digital storytelling on their websites and made those freely available. First, to David Jakes, that I had the pleasure of meeting this past November at the Tech Forum in Austin, who has terrific resources on digital storytelling and has actually attended the Center for Digital Storytelling's Institute there in Berkeley, California, and is certainly a great advocate for the power, but also the practical steps and strategies that can be successful in helping students tell digital stories. Particularly thanks to David for his 11-page PDF tutorial on using PhotoStory 3. Thanks also to Berna Jean Porter for her website DigiTales, The Art of Telling Stories, which is a wonderful place to find assessment rubrics as well as examples and all kinds of other related documents and suggestions for using digital storytelling in your classroom. Indicative, I think, of the compelling and engaging nature of the digital storytelling process was the fact that during our afternoon break in today's workshop, out of the 25 participants there, I think only one or maybe two actually took a break. Everyone else chose to work through the break. And at the end of the day, I actually found myself wishing that we had more time, because as I had suspected with the generationally mixed faculty that they have there at Miami, we had several folks who very readily came up with some personal stories that they wanted to share relating to their own experiences living through or growing up in the 1960s when Dr. Martin Luther King was one of many people involved in the civil rights movement here in the United States. One of those stories particularly was from one of the male teachers who in the mid to late 1960s had been a basketball player at a small West Texas high school that was one of the first to be racially integrated. And he told the story of how his basketball team, in part because they were racially integrated, but also because they were a very successful team, faced incredible discrimination in some of the towns and the restaurants and the places that they went. But heartening in his story was the fact that in a 3-year span of time, the coach of his team had gone from actually segregating the black players from the white players when they would go to a motel room in another town to, at the end of the third year, just giving the players the keys and having them go ahead and room. And they roomed in an integrated in an integrated way. And so that, to me, was really heartening. And I was just disappointed that we weren't able to fully complete some of those digital stories, and so maybe that's something that I'll be able to hopefully pursue later with these teachers. I would welcome any feedback that you have and reference you to the podcast show notes, where I'll be including links to the actual multimedia presentation that I shared goes along with this podcast, resources that we utilize, including the curriculum, which I'm sharing with a Creative Commons Attribution Only license, inviting you to share this with others and utilize this for your own purposes, either in your own professional development or as you work with teachers in your particular area. The last thing I'll conclude with are a few words from Dr. Martin Luther King himself, which I think is really appropriate. And this comes to us from the King Center website, And the King Center, of course, is in Atlanta, Georgia. And whether you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere in North America, somewhere in Europe, somewhere in Asia, in Australia, or wherever that might be, I would think that these words are extremely compelling to any of us who are in this business of education and who are concerned about issues like social justice and equality, and certainly want to see an even better day dawn for the equal treatment and the respect of human beings wherever they might be, whether that be in the United States, in Liberia, where we now have the first female president ever in the history, I think, of the African continent, or anywhere else. And so these words from Dr. King are extremely moving, and I think set a good tone for us as we start this school year. So you've been listening to Moving at the Speed of Creativity with Wesley Fryer. And again, I'd welcome any comments or feedback you might have. And we'll see you next time here on the podcast.
If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's a new definition of greatness. And this morning, the thing that I like about it, by giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great. Because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics to serve. Yes. You only need a heart full of grace.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Soul generated by love. You can be that servant.